Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Robert?
I'm doing well. You feeling a little tired?
Yeah.
You are?
After that Memorial Day weekend.
Tired after you know what you need as a pick-me-up is some Cove Fefe.
Oh, do I?
Yeah, you need some
you
Cove
Fefe.
You think
that would help?
Yes, apparently that is the new drink going around. That's what the president tweeted. Today we have a good show for us lined up. We are going to talk a little bit about an ethics complaint against Matt Bevin. So some news around that. We are talking about a court case labor unions have filed to block the right to work law that went into effect or will go into effect soon. It was passed in the most recent legislative session. And we are going to talk about some malpractice panels, which are beginning to form, which is also based on another bill that was passed in the legislative session last time. And as always, we have some quick hits. Jasmine, how are you ready for all of this?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's go ahead and get started. Okay, Jasmine. So we've talked on the show before about Matt Bevin's house. Do you remember that?
Right. So this was the house in Anchorage. Someone discovered that Bevin Security was guarding this house.
People in Anchorage are a little nosy. I think that may be a generalization, but I think it's true.
Right. And it sounded like he got this house at a very, very low price.
Right. So someone bought a house in Anchorage through an LLC, and then all of a sudden the governor's security started setting up at that house. So the seller of that house was a man who the governor placed on the KRS board, and it was later shown that seller, whose name is Neil Ramsey, had invested and had received a tax break for investing in a company called Neuronetrics, which is a startup company that Matt Bevin has said he is the lead investor in. So Tom Loftus of the Courier-Journal, he's been doing the majority of the reporting of the story for the Courier-Journal. For some catch-up, you should read the Courier-Journal and Tom Loftus for more information or listen to some of our old podcasts about it. So news this week is that Common Cause Kentucky, which is a group that promotes transparency in government, they filed an ethics complaint against the governor. First of all, Common Cause is led by a man named Richard Beliles and Andy Beshear. This is where it gets a little political. Andy Beshear pledged to give all the money he received from the Tim Longmire scandal to that group after it was identified that Tim Longmire received kickbacks for raising it. We talked about that too. Do you remember that?
We did.
Yeah. So basically, like, there was dirty money all over the place, and Matt Bevin was like, "You've got dirty money, Andy Beshear." And Andy Beshear's like, "You're right. I do. I have to do something about this. I'm going to give the money to a good government group. I'm going to give it to Common Cause Kentucky." So, okay, Andy Beshear, for his part, about this particular scandal with the governor and his house, he said, "This is pretty simple. A governor can't buy a mansion from a state contractor for half off, and he can't create a brand new $250,000 job for his best friends. Those are the types of things that aren't Democrat or Republican. They're just right or wrong." So there is and continues to be a lot of smoke here. So Andy Beshear is kind of calling out not just the House, but the thing we talked about last week with the man who was given the number two position in the...
Right, so there's a couple people who seem to be Bevin friends who have been getting pretty high-paying state jobs.
Right, absolutely. And Andy Beshear says there's a lot of smoke here. So Andy Beshear has weighed in on this. Common Cause has filed this complaint. So just in terms of how complaints work, I'm not totally sure about the process for formal complaints to the Executive Branch Ethics Commission, which is the group that you file ethics complaints to. But I've got a pretty good handle on it, I think. So basically, there are five members of this commission. Right now, three of them were nominated by Steve Beshear, and two of them were nominated by Matt Bevin. So I think what happens is that when you get a complaint, you know, they receive a complaint, that triggers an investigation by the commission, and then if they believe it's necessary, the commission can actually sue the government employee. So they can sue, you know, to say, this is bad, and then, you know, if they lose the court case, they have to pay or whatever. Okay, Andy Beshear is worried that the Ethics Commission will be co-opted by the governor.
So what do you mean by that?
Okay, so right now, like I said, there's three members of the Ethics Commission that were nominated by Andy Beshear's father, Steve, and two that were nominated by Governor Bevin. But before this commission meets the next time, one of the Beshear appointees' terms ends.
Oh, man.
So 3 days before the next meeting.
What a twist.
Right. And so Matt Bevin, the current governor, will have the opportunity to nominate another person. So before this group meets for the next time, there will be three Bevin appointees and two Beshear appointees. So Andy Beshear says, "I'm not sure if the Ethics Commission is going to be the best route for investigating this smoke." as he put it.
Right.
Right. Governor Bevin, during this entire situation, he's poo-pooed the whole process. He says it's political. If you'll remember, Andy Beshear gave a bunch of money to Common Cause. So he believes that basically Common Cause is in the tank for Andy Beshear. So there was a press conference Friday, which I think you're going to be talking about as well. So Friday the 26th, he blasted the complaint in the media for 15 minutes. So he's up there for longer than 15 minutes, but he spends 15 minutes of the speech blasting the media in this complaint. He said things like, who meant the media, are destroying good people and their reputations. And I have this quote. Ryland Barton reported this quote from WFPL. He said, Bevin said that the coverage of the deal could have a chilling effect on people who want to work in state government because reporters try to, quote, destroy them, vilify them, smear and slander them. And then he said, people that are making the decisions to actually fix the pension system are the very same people that you're trying to destroy, unquote. And then the last thing that Matt Bevin said was, how do you expect to get men and women with any competence at all to actually serve on boards like the Kentucky Retirement System or to serve in the state legislature?
It sounds kind of like you're saying, how do you expect them to serve in the state legislature? You got to...
That's one interpretation.
You got to give them money. He's like, you got to, you know.
You know, if they... How dare you go after them for selling me a house for half price?
Right.
Yeah, right. So that's what he said. But he wasn't done after all of this. He didn't just yell at them the media for 15 minutes during his speech. He also took to Twitter. He tweeted, quote, a sick man at Tom Loftus CJ of the at Courier Journal was caught sneaking around my home and property, was removed by state police, # peeping Tom.
It's kind of unfortunate that his name's Tom, I guess, because that's a pretty catchy hashtag.
Right. So the governor intimated here that Tom Loftus was sneaking around the house. I'm picturing by this tweet, like, he's in the bushes. He's, like, you know, rappelling down from a helicopter or something. He's doing something really sketchy. But it turns out that, okay, so their Courier Journal responded to this, and their education reporter, Allison Ross, wrote a story about this tweet. So apparently this tweet references an occurrence from March, which precipitated the whole story. So before we knew the governor was there for sure, we just saw some security setting up. Tom Loftus went out there, he went to the house, and he asked a bunch of questions to the state police, and the state police were like, yeah, we're the governor's detail. And he's like, is the governor in the house? And he's like, we can't really tell you, but we're the governor's detail. And basically that was what was going on. And Tom Loftus said he never got closer than 20 feet to the house. And he was speaking with the police, and the police were like, okay, you got to go now. And he was like, all right, cool, I'm going to go write my story now. And that was what happened. So that was the sneaking around, was basically like he asked a bunch of questions because he's a newspaper reporter, and then, you know, left because they were like, all right, I think that's enough. That's a little different than the image, I think.
Being physically removed
by
the police.
I don't think # peeping Tom was appropriate.
No, probably not.
For that, yeah. So Matt Bevin has faced blowback from many of the newspapers in the state based on, you know, how much he's been attacking the media lately. So he's consistently criticized the Courier Journal and the Herald Leader all the time. But he has mostly steered clear of the CNHI properties. We've talked a little bit about the media landscape in Kentucky. These are smaller papers that are, you know, dailies in smaller cities, the Ashland Daily Independent, the Glasgow Daily Times, and there's a few other ones that they own. I think they own four or five properties in the state. So Ronnie Ellis, who is, for my money, the best columnist for these properties, he wrote a column essentially defending journalism and criticizing the governor's stance against the media. So it's a great column. We're gonna link to it in our show notes, and you should read that for sure. To me, I think that this is the biggest scandal of the Bevin administration now by far. And Matt Bevin has taken the tack of attacking the media. Jasmine, do you think that will be effective?
I don't know. I mean, I think it works for some people and not for others. I think that people who are fans of Matt Bevin are probably like, yeah, the fake news, the media.
Crooked media.
I don't know how it's going to affect his governance, but I think there are some people that are right there with him, but a lot of people think he's a little ridiculous.
I think it all comes down to, like, the people who might vote either way. I think basically, like, there's hardcore Democrats that are like, I don't trust anything that Matt Bevin has to say. And then you have hardcore Republicans that are like, Matt Bevin is in the right here. I can't believe the media is going after him, the liberal media, et cetera, et cetera. And then you got the people in the middle. And I'm wondering how they're feeling about all this. I mean, there is a lot of smoke. Like, Andy Beshear made pretty clear that there's a lot of smoke. And I think that that's accurate. There's definitely some of the stuff that Matt Bevin ran against, this pay for play type situation. And it's definitely something I think that people are going to look at. I don't know how they're going to come down, though, because we live in a completely different political landscape than we ever have before.
Right.
And people trust institutions, including newspapers, much less than they did in the past. So anyways, that is the update. We will let you know about all this stuff as it goes through. The Herald Leader was shot up essentially a couple days ago. We didn't really talk about that in the story, but you know, that's part of this. Maybe we're not really sure. We'll let you know about the Ethics Commission and the complaint there, if anything comes out of that, any potential investigation from the Attorney General's office, or anything else that happens in with respect to this ethics complaint regarding Matt Bevin's house. We will be sure to keep you updated here on My Old Kentucky Podcast. But in the meantime, Jasmine, tell us about Right to Work and labor unions filing a lawsuit.
All right. So if you've been a long time My Old Kentucky Podcast listener, you'll remember Robert did a whole segment on Right to Work. So I suggest you listen to that if you want to know about what is contained in that law. But to put it most simply, it means that unions can't require people to pay dues as a condition of employment. So this means that there could be two classes of workers, union and non-union, working under the same union agreement, giving the non-due paying members the benefit of being in the union.
Right, many of the benefits. So this is what unions call the free rider problem.
Right. Why many people think this is bad is that it can weaken unions because they have less members and get less money from dues, which may make it more difficult to bargain and get good wages, contracts, benefits, all of those kind of things.
Right.
Right to Work was one of the first bills passed in the 2017 session. That was Matt Bevin's, you know, priority number one, basically, mm-hmm. and it passed very easily. And so now we have two union groups who have sued to block the legislation. So one, they are asking for an injunction to block it while the court case is pending, to keep it from going into effect. And two, they are arguing that it is unconstitutional. So the two union groups who have sued are AFL-CIO, which is the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations. That is one group.
Yeah.
And Local Teamsters 89.
AFL-CIO being probably the, I don't know if they're still the biggest union, but historically, maybe one of the most
right.
important unions in American history.
So the complaint names the governor and the labor secretary, Derek Ramsey, as the defendants.
Kentucky football, you know, star from
right.
I think the 70s and 80s.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Bevin's communications director says that this is politically motivated, which sounds like what they say every time he gets sued.
Right.
Robert just talked about that with the ethics complaint, that was political too. So they also called it frivolous and said that they are interrupting political momentum for political gain. I think in Matt Bevin's live stream, he talked about, you know, Brady Industries, the company that's coming to Ashland. They came to Kentucky because of Right to Work.
Right,
and they are trying to stop all this momentum that we have.
Not just Brady Industries, but I think he credited, you know, the big Amazon expansion and the big, there's a lot of investment that's gone on in Kentucky, and he said that's all because of Right to Work.
Right.
And that was also on that Friday press conference.
So he's saying this is political, it's frivolous, and you're stopping all this momentum that we have right now. But the union groups believe, however, that the Kentucky Constitution has protections that would prevent unequal corporate special legislation, and that the law is discriminatory because it's treating unions differently than other groups that collect dues. There's a constitutional argument that's based on the takings clause. Robert, do you know about the takings clause?
I've got no idea what the takings clause is.
Okay, so the takings clause is part of the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, and normally the takings clause is pretty near and dear to free market conservatives.
Interesting.
It provides that private property should not be taken for public use without just compensation. So it prevents government takings, basically.
Gotcha. So it's like, you know, you can do eminent domain, but you have to give the property owner a reasonable amount of money. You can't just be like, this is mine now. It's all mine.
Right. Right to Work compels one private party to provide benefits to another with no compensation is the argument. Opponents believe that Right to Work laws, which permit represented workers to quit their union and stop paying fees while simultaneously obligating the union to continue to spend resources representing them, that they're saying that's an unconstitutional taking. And
gotcha.
So the takings clause, that's a federal argument based on the U.S. Constitution, but the Kentucky lawsuit was filed in state court and alleges violations of the Kentucky Constitution. But we also have our own takings clause. So the takings clause is also part of the Kentucky Constitution, and that's what this suit is based on the Kentucky
gotcha.
One. So Right to Work requires a union to represent all the business's workers in collective bargaining, those who aren't members. What the union group's attorney is arguing that Right to Work requires a union to represent all the business workers in collective bargaining, even those who aren't members. So unions, whenever possible, they insist on these provisions in their contract with management, forcing non-members to pay fees for that representation.
Right.
And so what these are called are security clauses. The attorney for these two union groups is arguing that prohibiting them is the equivalent of robbing the union of its property.
Interesting.
So that's the takings clause argument.
So he's saying basically like the state is preventing the unions from collecting these fees, which is in a sense taking their property away from them because these contracts were already in place.
Right. Why this argument might not work, the takings clause is usually applied to real property, and this argument is kind of applying it to fees and workers.
Right.
And another thing is that federal law doesn't, our federal labor statute doesn't require unions to act as an exclusive representative. Thus, Right to Work laws don't force unions to represent non-members free of charge.
So federal law doesn't require unions to act as an exclusive representative. So they could represent themselves is what they're saying, I guess. Right to Work laws don't force unions to represent non-members free of charge. That seems, yeah, I guess they're like, they are saying that it would be possible to create a tiered structure.
Right.
Where, interesting. I don't know how that would work, but.
That's an argument against the takings clause working against Right to Work laws. And the Seventh Circuit rejected the takings argument. So the Seventh Circuit, that was an Indiana Right to Work case that they heard and they upheld.
Does the Seventh Circuit have a better record of having their stuff reversed at the Supreme Court than the Fifth, which is...
We're the Sixth.
Oh, we're the Sixth and the Sixth?
I'm pretty sure we had the worst.
Yeah, we do have the worst. So they probably do have a better one.
Yeah, so they probably do. But the Seventh Circuit did recently reject that argument. So that is argument number one for the union groups. Argument number two is based on the special legislation clause in the Kentucky Constitution. So this clause forbids special legislation, and it list certain things that the General Assembly cannot pass local or special legislation for. Examples of some of those things are the legislature can't grant divorces. They can't change someone's name. They can't enforce an invalid will. These are things they can't create local or special legislation for. It lists 29 different things in this clause in the Kentucky Constitution. And so it contains a provision about special acts regulating labor. The issue here is what makes something special legislation versus general legislation, because obviously the legislature can enact general legislation regarding labor, but the issue is what is special or sometimes called local legislation. And so special legislation is a law that applies to a particular place or especially to a particular member or members of a class or things in the same situation, but not the entire class.
I see. So the unions are saying that they are a class.
Yes, and that there are other entities that are in a similar situation, but they are being treated differently.
Right, so basically like other groups that collect fees.
Right, so unions are just one group that require dues or memberships, and they're saying they're being treated differently. And so I think the example that one of the attorneys cited was Kentucky Farm Bureau requires everyone with their insurance to pay a yearly membership fee in addition to their premiums. The Kentucky Chamber of Commerce and the Kentucky Bar Association. I know about that. I have to pay dues. Those are our organizations that only provide services to due paying members. So why then are other organizations besides unions banned from requiring dues and membership fees for their services? And so they are saying the answer is that this legislation was designed solely to target unions and is a violation of the special legislation.
So what the unions are saying is there's this law that says you can't create legislation around particular groups. So if you're a part of a class, like a larger organization or a larger group of similar type entities, you can't create something that targets one member of a class specifically. And
but,
unions are like, we are
the entire class.
Yeah. So they're like, we're a group that collects fees just like Farm Bureau, just like the Bar Association, et cetera. And you created legislation that only attacks us and you can't do that. And that's special.
Yes.
Right. Okay. That's more compelling to me than the last one.
I've never read and I've haven't personally seen any case law about the special legislation clause in the Kentucky Constitution. This was something I had to learn about because I've never seen the argument before, probably because I don't practice civil law. So,
right.
So this is all new to me. So I don't really know how case law would come down for that, but it does sound like maybe a better argument than the takings clause argument.
Well, we'll see.
Right. Some law professors think the takings clause argument is a really good one. Some think it's a really bad one. So I'm not sure if that will work in any court or not. So just looking at some other right to work suits, Indiana's law was upheld by the Seventh Circuit, as I said before, but West Virginia's was struck down by the trial court and will be heard at the state Supreme Court in the fall. So there are other right to work suits out there. Those are two of them that have been recent that people have been talking about. So that's where we are. These union groups have hired well-established labor law attorneys. So I feel like these people know what they're doing. And, you know, these are the best arguments they've got, but don't know if they will work or not.
So even if Kentucky, this law, you know, gets, people are being sued and this is going to probably head to the Kentucky Supreme Court, do you think it'll head to the United States Supreme Court?
I think because they are not arguing violations of federal law. They are only arguing violations of the Kentucky Constitution. I think the Kentucky Supreme Court is the highest this case will go.
So the Indiana court case was upheld by the Seventh Circuit. So that's federal, right?
Right.
So the Indiana, so while Kentucky's may not, this issue itself may end up.
Yes.
So what could happen is the state Supreme Court could say, oh yeah, right to work is fine. But then if this Indiana case gets sent all the way up to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court says, oh no, right to work isn't okay, the Supreme Court would take precedence, right?
Yes.
So even if this does get decided by the Kentucky Supreme Court, that may not necessarily be the end of it.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if the arguments against right to work are going to be winners.
Right.
Democrats will not have control of the Supreme Court.
Uh-huh.
I think that these laws will probably be upheld.
Yeah.
But that's just my guess.
But we'll see. Yeah, we'll definitely see. All right, Jasmine. Well, we have one other topic to talk about, which is malpractice panels. So, Jasmine, do you remember when we talked? You did a whole show.
Right.
On torts.
We're talking about torts again.
Yeah, so you were talking about me talking about right to work, and I'm talking about you.
Right, we should have stuck with
torts.
Our
yeah, we
same
probably,
segments, but that's okay.
Whatever, we're switching it up. So the Paducah Sun, which is a newspaper in Western Kentucky, they had an article about the formation of medical review panels, which are new in Kentucky after the passage of Senate Bill 4. So the chief sponsor of that legislation, Danny Carroll, is from Paducah, which is why this got a nice article in the Paducah Sun, but I didn't see anything about it in the Courier Journal or any of the larger newspapers in town. So Jasmine's episode on torts, which you should definitely go back and listen to. She one of the things she talks about is medical malpractice verdicts are on the decline. Medical malpractice makes up about 2% of our nation's healthcare cost, which, while it's a low percentage, is a lot of money. And also, one of the things that you pointed out was that if done poorly, these panels could run afoul of the Seventh Amendment, which is trial by jury in civil cases.
Right.
So, yeah, that just as to sum up that, you know, medical malpractice as an issue, that was what Senate Bill 4 wanted to attack. So what the panels do, what the Senate Bill four setup were panels that included three lawyers, and any member of the bar can apply to be on one of these panels, and they can apply at the Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services.
So I could do that.
You could.
If I wanted to.
And not only could you, if you got onto one of these, you would be compensated at $250 a day with a maximum of $2,000 per case.
All right.
You could get some money for doing these things. And so basically what these panels seek to do, they're going to review whether or not standard of care was breached in civil suits against healthcare providers. And they can render one of three opinions, which are standard of care was breached, standard of care was not breached, or standard of care was breached, but that was not the proximate cause of injury in the case.
Proximate cause. That's like 2 weeks of torts in law school.
That sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you talked about, you know, the Seventh Amendment and whether these panels invalidated juries. So it seems like the way this is going to work, these opinions of these panels will be permissible in court, but they will not be binding. So I'm kind of curious as to, like,
what's the point then?
What's the point? Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's my main question. So I think one of the things that's very important is full employment of lawyers. you know, maybe not. I don't think so. It's just giving $2,000 to all the lawyers that you can.
Right. And
of.
I think the way that we talked about this at first was assuming that the panels would have doctors.
Uh-huh.
On
but
them.
It does not seem like that will be the case. These are lawyers. And it will be. I mean, that was one of the things that doctors are going to be probably more able to identify standards of care more than lawyers. But
well, I don't think so, because doctors are more likely to protect
doctors
their own, mm-hmm. I think. But I do think it depends, you know, do you have plaintiff's lawyers on this panel? Do you have defense attorneys? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it all depends on who applies. And that'll be interesting to see. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't seem like this has much teeth, right?
No.
Yeah, so you're going to be able to submit this into evidence, but, you know.
It seems like it just prolongs litigation.
Yep. And that's one of the things they worried about, too. You have, I didn't talk about this, even though I wrote it down, but you have 9 months to come up with an answer. And if you don't come up with an answer, you don't come up with an answer, it goes forward without you. But yeah, it's going to be tough to get all these lawyers together to talk about this kind of stuff. You know, they're only getting paid $250 a day, with a maximum of $2,000 per case. So it'll be interesting to see if this has any effect whatsoever. It seems like a law without much teeth at all. But Jasmine, you should apply and make yourself, that could be your side hustle. Do you need a side hustle? Maybe. I'm not sure. All right, Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Go for it.
All right. Awesome. So Jim Bunning, former U.S. representative and U.S. senator from Northern Kentucky, he died this week. In addition to being a Kentucky politician, a Republican, he was a Hall of Fame Major League Baseball pitcher who once threw a no-hitter on Father's Day. So
also Patrick Toll's former U.K. quarterback's grandfather.
We are having a field day with Republican Kentucky quarterbacks today on the show. We had Derek Ramsey earlier. Now we have Patrick Toll's. Okay. Amal Thapar. Who's a judge from Kentucky who President Trump nominated to be on the U.S. Court of Appeals. He was confirmed by the Senate this week, the full Senate, on a 52-48 party line vote. So very, very conservative judge. I think it's fair
right.
to say.
I taught you about Judge Thapar.
You did. You taught me all about him, and he was confirmed. He is now on the 6th District Court of Appeals.
Sixth Circuit
Court of Appeals.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, maybe he'll be able to increase their rate of not being reversed by the Supreme Court. Okay, Jasmine, a wildcat strike occurred at the Omni Hotel construction site last week. Do you know what a wildcat strike is?
No.
When people who are workers that are not in a union, they go on strike. There's no approval. There's no like process to this. They just walk off the job. About 100 non-union laborers who were mostly immigrants, they walked off the job, their jobs hanging drywall at the Omni Hotel, which is a large project in downtown Louisville. They're being paid about $24 an hour, while other union workers are being paid about $45 an hour. They had been told by their employer that the repeal of the prevailing wage law prevented them from being paid, but that is not the case. That is a lie. And eventually they did return to work, and many stated that they were going to seek union representation. So this was kind of a neat thing for people who are supporters of labor union to see. You know, they've been beat down quite a bit this year,
right.
But they are starting to see some people who are seeking out their representation and to see where unions really do matter to some people. Okay, Jasmine, you talked about Matt Bevin talking about how the right to work law being attacked was a really bad thing. I talked about Matt Bevin saying attacking the media. Both of those things happened at a press conference last Friday. But the entire purpose of the press conference was quite newsworthy, and that's that Kentucky set a record for promised investment this year, with $5.8 billion being pledged to projects across the state, which is great. This was that was why the governor was actually speaking, not to attack the media and not to attack opponents of right to work. But he did talk about the $5.8 billion at length. He credited right to work as one of the reasons. But it's probably a more complicated story than that. I think having $5.8 billion in promised investment is great. It's certainly better than having less than $5.8 billion in promised investment. But promised investment is just that. It's promised. It's not for sure. So, you know, if there's a recession in a few years and some of these projects don't get off the ground, that would be too bad. We aren't really sure if it's actually going to be that much investment. They may scale it back and they could cancel it outright. So this is, you know, like I said, it's great. It's really good to set a record for promised investment, but it doesn't really become real until, you know, it becomes real. So last quick hit of today, Jasmine, we had the first bill of the 2018 General Assembly pre-filed this week. So before the legislative session starts, legislators are allowed to pre-file bills that will be considered. So John Schnickel and Sal Santoro, who are both Republicans from Boone County, they filed a resolution to honor bus drivers, school bus drivers, in the month of May. So they want to make May the School Bus Driver Appreciation Month. Jasmine, I cannot think of anything I support more than that. Bus drivers,
I don't have a problem with
that. I rode a bus for a long time to school, and as I've gotten older, I think that has got to be the hardest job I can imagine, because I have a really poor sense of direction in the first place. So driving,
you do. That is so very true.
Yeah, driving around a city in a bus would be tough. But then you have a bunch of really
unruly children,
a bunch of kids in the back that are going crazy. So, you know, I want to appreciate bus drivers during the month of May. Let's appreciate. But it's still the month of May when we're recording this. We appreciate bus drivers here at My Old Kentucky Podcast. Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @MyOldKYPod. They can like our Facebook page. We post our show notes on Medium. There's a link to an article that Robert talked about that you should check out. And you can find our podcast on pretty much any podcasting app.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show this week, and we will see you. Wait, hold on. Before we go, we may or may not have a show next week. So if we're not here, you know, don't freak out. We might, though.
We're going to do our best.
All right. Well, we'll see you soon.